Blog Talk Radio.
There's a direct relationship between having the businesses and being in prison. Go find an Asian, see how many Asians you can find in American prisons. They're going to be in there. But 51% of your prisoners will be black because blacks don't have any businesses and industries. There's a direct link. Blacks won't practice group economics. Blacks won't practice group politics. If you don't practice, you're setting yourself up. I told that five-story building, you're setting yourself to get wiped out. Understand the nature of race, which is economics. If you build the first floor, it's economic. Build your businesses and your industries. Control business and industry, and put that pulls in your money, and hold that money, and practice group economics with it. Arab and Asian money bounces 12 to 13 times for at least. Jewish money bounces 18 times. Black folks got to learn how to practice group economics. Black Americans spend every penny they get outside their own community. Then you take the money and the wealth that you get from that first floor and go to the second floor. The second floor is politics. You then take that money on the first floor and you control your politics. Black folk must quit allowing people to tell them to go out and vote. Vote for what? Nobody's going to do anything for black folk in politics. Politics is controlled by money. Major corporations, who got the money? That's what controls politics. If you have no money, you have no say-so, you have no benefits coming. So you take your money and you control and you take your money on the first floor, you buy every politician on the second floor. And any politician you can't buy, you rent or lease them to get what you need. Then once you get the second floor under control with the politician, with your money, then you go to the third floor. The third floor then is the police department and the court system. You take your money from the first floor and your politics on the second floor and you control the court system and the police department. Then the fourth floor, then is media. You then take the money that you generate off the first floor from business and industries and you go after radio stations, TV stations, newspapers, and cable systems so that you can now inform and communicate with your own people. Right now, black folk own and control less than 35 thousandths of 1% of the media in the United States. Out of 12,000 radio stations, black folk own about something like about 75 or 80. That's all. You own no cable systems. You don't have a daily newspaper. You have nothing of importance. You got about one black TV station. And you can't communicate with your people. You can't inform your people. You can't do anything. You can have Rush Limbaugh and all the rest of the guys talking about racism all day long and bad-mouthing you. And O'Reilly, they can call black folk all kind of names all day long. What are you going to do? You can't respond. You can't even communicate with your own people because you don't have an economic base. 51% of all the prisons in the United States are black people. You know, you only make up 12% of the population. That's no accident. It's because you don't control the economics and the politics. And they're going to go after the weakest people they can get their hands on to incarcerate. That's the black folk. And what are you going to do in response to them when they over-incarcerate you? You're going to go out and have a march, a demonstration. We're going to march. March, who cares? Marching has never changed anything.
Now, learn this from Joel Osteen. That's my man. He be texting me. That's my man. This God done put some people around me, show me some stuff. He was telling this story. He said this man that went to heaven, and he was walking with Peter down this aisleway, and was going down this corridor, had a lot of doors on it, and said all these doors had names on it. And he said, Peter, let me ask you something. What's all these doors, these names on? He said, don't worry about it. Just go ahead. So he kept walking. He messed around. He saw one of them doors and had his name on it. He said, whoa. He said, hey, Peter, this here ain't got my name on it. Something I need to know? He said, man, don't worry about that. You here now. Just go on in there and talk to him. See what he said, nah, I won't know what's in the door. He said, you sure you won't see what's in the door? He said, yeah. So he opened up the door. It was a warehouse. It had nothing but shelves on it. And then the shelves had nothing but packages. And all the packages had his name on them. And he said, what is all these boxes? He said, that's all of the blessings, all of the things God wanted to ship to you. But number one, you didn't ask him for it. Then number two, you didn't believe you would have it. Then you doubted him. And then you felt like you wasn't worthy. And so now all these boxes is up here. Now the man standing there wishing he had never even been in the room. And I started thinking. I got some dudes that work for me. And I said, I want you to do this graph for me. And that's what I'm finna show you now. See, what happened is, When God sends your package, he only sends it to one street. That's Faith Street. You got to stay in faith. You can't move off of Faith Street. You can't get on Doubted Drive. You can't be over there and start doubting it because your package going to go right on by. You can't lose your faith and get on Not Meant to Be Way because your package is going to keep going right on by because the package just go to Faith Street. You can get your little feelings hurt, I ain't worthy. Guess what? Your package going to keep going right on by. You have not because you ask not. Then you sit up here and start feeling sorry for yourself. You go on Pity Way, your package keep going right on by. If you stay right on Faith Street, don't ever come off because the blessing is coming. If you wait on it, here it comes. It may not come when you want it, but it on time. But if you get up and you move off of Faith Street, your box going to get sent back to sender. And now you're going to have a warehouse with a bunch of boxes with your name on it that you didn't never get. And I don't know about you, but I want everything he got for me. If he got something for me, I need all of mine. Because I don't know about you, but God lay you out, man. God will give you stuff. Man, he done took me places. I ain't never thought I was going to go. I done seen parts of the world I never even thought I could go to. He done gave me stuff. He done put people in my life. God will do it for you, man. But you just got to stay, man. Use these principles of success. Understand, God is just that way. He'll lay you out. Because if he can lay me out, see, if he fix me and change me and get me over here trying to do better, I ain't perfect. I'm just trying to do better. I still say some stuff I ain't supposed to say. You understand? I ain't got it all together yet. I just got in the gate. I'm a new kind of Christian. But ain't no lock on my gate either. So if you see, once you check me, I'm probably going to check you back. But I'm getting better at that. I don't know how to love my enemies yet. I'm getting better at it, though. But it's a process. And the more times we can make people understand that it's a process, the more people can come in. And y'all people that have been good to me, that have been praying for me. I mean, man, my mama, if she could see me now, I just wish my mama could see me. Because she been praying for this hill all her life. Watch my son. Well, he done watched me, mama. And I'm cool now. And my philosophy is very simple. I was who I was, but I am who I am. And I'm cool with both them people. Because who I was wasn't that bad cap. I made some mistakes, but I've been changed a little bit. And it's still a process. And the more people that you invite into the process, the better this is. Because ain't nobody perfect no how. So I really appreciate y'all, man, hearing me and listening to me. I'm going to ask Kirk Franklin if he will come.
Many a young athlete entertains hoop dreams. Few, if any, have tried as hard to make them come true as the kid our Steve Hartman has gone to see.
Every week, he set himself up for disappointment. Every week. 13-year-old Jamarian Stiles came to this community center in Boca Raton, Florida, hoping to play basketball with the other kids. And every week, he was rejected.
They'll start picking teams, and I would be the only one left out. And then they'll just tell me, just go home and stuff. You can break someone's heart like that.
The problem was obvious to everyone but Jamarian. He lost his hands and most of his arms as an infant due to a rare bacterial infection. But he insisted that was no reason to give up his hoop dreams.
What about soccer? Have you heard of that sport?
Yeah, hear it every day.
Why don't you play soccer? That just seems like the obvious thing.
You would think that I would be good at soccer. I'm really not. I'm horrible.
Which is why, on the first day of class here at Eagles Landing Middle School, Jamarian took his case to basketball coach Darian Williams.
Yeah.
Said he wanted to be on the team this year.
I said, all great, well, just make sure you try out.
He said, okay, great, but what are you really thinking?
This man has no arms.
Yeah.
How is he going to play basketball? But, man, he told me, Mr. Williams, I've never been on a team before. Even if I don't play, I just want to be on the team. And how could I say no to that?
And that's how the Eagles got their first armless basketball player. Jamarian, number two there, quickly earned a reputation as the hardest worker on the squad.
He was usually the first one in the gym, usually the last one to leave.
Still, he sat on the bench most of the season.
Try one more.
Until last month. Coach put him in the game with about 6 minutes left. And when he eventually got the ball on the far side of the court, everyone yelled, "Shoot it!" So he did. And sank. A three-pointer. And if you didn't quite see that, don't worry. Because shortly after, he got the ball again. This time on the near side. For another three-pointer. At the buzzer. Jamarion Styles, the kid no one would pick, was now everyone's hero. Needless to say, today, Jamarion can play all he wants at the community center. He just made the volleyball team and has every intention of playing football next year. Really, the only thing he won't play is the victim.
If I could wave a magic wand right now and give you your arms back, would you want them?
I don't need them.
You don't need them?
No.
Who needs hands when you've got this kind of touch?
All right. Sort of like doing open phone lines this morning on anything you guys want to talk about. After this quick break, we're going to come back and briefly talk about water. Okay. I'm going to talk about water for about 5 minutes and if you got any comment on it, fine. But and then it's just open phone line. So we'll be back right with in a few minutes.
People keep talking about how the world is going to come to an end. And I wonder, in these days and these times,
if anybody.
People keep talking about how society is falling down today. And as hard as I try not to listen just to what them folks got to say, but you know, I just can't help but look around and see we digging our own grave. And there's just one thing I want to know. Can anybody be saved? Can anybody be saved? Anybody be saved? Can anybody gonna be saved? Why don't you save me? Save me, Lord. Save me, Lord. Can anybody be saved? Well.
From the vibe.
long as I wanna be saved, how can I be free in my mind? As long as I'm a slave, is anybody gonna be saved? Is anybody gonna be saved? Oh, save again.
Okay, let's see. All right, open phone lines, any topic you guys want to discover. I'm just going to briefly talk about water. And I've got on our Facebook page, which is DIY Housing TV, DIY Housing TV, which stands for Do-It-Yourself Housing. I've got some graphs there. How much water is on the planet? And the chart has there 326 million trillion gallons of water on Earth. The water that we have on the planet is, I believe, well, the water that you drink is billions of years old. Matter of fact, I believe it's probably older than the sun. That's old. I'm just talking about the water. And then we're made up of water. 70% of our body is water. So I guess in a way we're all billions of years old. I mean, if you break it down to just water. But you know what? That's a lot of zeros. 326 million trillion gallons of water on Earth. So there's an abundance of water on Earth. Matter of fact, just in my opinion, the way I look at things, the easiest way to become, I'd say, worth a million. Now, because a lot of times when you hear the term million or billion, you know, you break it down to dollars or some type of currency. But, you know, essentially if you have just an acre of land, just one little acre of land, you know, you've got probably about one acre of land. You probably have about a million square feet of water, of groundwater. Groundwater. I was talking to a friend of mine yesterday. He was in out in Arizona, going across miles and miles. No buildings, no sign of what a urbanite would call, you know, life. And he says, and I told him, I said, man, you're living in the real USA. He says, well, yeah, but, you know, there's no water out there. And I said, look at all that vegetation. He's out, you know, a lot of but there was a lot of vegetation out there. I said, well, now, how do you think all that vegetation is out there where you're at right now? I mean, we're talking about miles and miles and got thousands of acres of land. But there was still vegetation. I said, that's groundwater. I mean, you're driving on literally an ocean of water. All right, so he had to readjust his mindset. But there's quite a bit of, now, in some places, water is easier to get to. Like the eastern part of the, east of the Mississippi, is easier to get access to water. West of the Mississippi, you know, when it comes to groundwater, it's, you know, you got to go deeper. And then when you got major population hubs out in the west, like the Inland Empire in California, Los Angeles, California metro area, you know, Denver, Colorado, you know, west of Mississippi, it's a little bit harder. You know, they're more conservative or conservation minded, as they should be, west of the Mississippi. But on the east of the Mississippi, particularly if you're in a rural area, you know, like I'm on a well. I have two. I can go municipal, or I can go with. I know at least, I don't know, probably about four of my immediate neighbors. You know, we're all on wells, our own individual wells. So, because municipal water is expensive. But in any event, but there's a lot of water out there. So on, and I got some charts on there, but there's plenty of water. And remember, water recycles itself. You might drink a glass of water today that at one time some of those water molecules in there passed through the body of Cleopatra or Julius Caesar or Stalin, you know, or Lenin, you know, Tsar Nicholas or the Emperor of Japan. But it recycles itself. So, like, say, the water, I really don't believe. Now, there might be some areas or some municipalities or some settlements around the globe where they're experiencing water shortages, but there's an abundance of water. And then now with technology, that you know, you have people that there's groundwater, there's rainwater, and then there's water in the air. So all those charts, now people are coming up with technology where, you know, they can harvest the water from the air. But in any event, okay, let me go back to, they say the purest form of water is rainwater, and then there's dew water, but water, you know, it you know, it's a recyclable thing, it's part of the renewable energy piece. They say 96.5% of the water on the planet. Well, first thing, 95.6% of the water on the planet is salt water. All right, but we know how to remove the salt. Then 3.5% of the water on the planet is fresh water. And oceans contain 96.5% of the water on the planet. Permanent ice and snow is 1.7%. Now, think about it. Permanent ice and snow. So when you think about Antarctica, which is a continent, that's where some of the permanent ice and snow is. A whole continent. You know, they got land there, too. But Greenland, most of Greenland, which is a huge island, most of that's got, you know, a lot of permanent ice and snow. and then parts of Canada, you know, northern parts of Russia, what have you. All right, groundwater, which is 1.7% of the available water on the planet. But, you know, once that's, you know, that's 1% of over 300 million trillion gallons of water. That's ground. That's, you know, it, and not everybody has access to groundwater. You know, if you're in an urbanized area, you're drinking tap, which is municipal water. Lakes and rivers contain 0.014, so that's the Amazon, and you take your Great Lakes. Like, I remember I was in Milwaukee once, in Milwaukee, Wisconsin, and I got, I mean, Lake Michigan was there. And what was amazing is it looked like an ocean. You couldn't see to the other side of it. I mean, Lake Michigan is huge. And it's not the largest lake out there either. And any other lakes that are huge in size as well. But lakes and rivers, like the Mississippi, I've seen that several times. But the Amazon and the what's that? Egypt, the Nile River. They contain 0.014. They contain that much. Atmosphere contains 0.0001% of the water. And a breakdown of fresh water, permanent ice and snow, 68% of the fresh water is frozen in the form of ice and snow. Groundwater makes up 30.1% of the fresh water that's, I guess, I'm sitting on it right now, me and all my neighbors, or wherever you are, more than likely you're sitting on fresh water too. Just sitting on it, all right, or driving on it. And then lakes and rivers, 0.3%. So there's plenty of water. So if you get a municipal water bill that is not to your liking, I would suggest go out, buy yourself an acre of land. Now make sure you can put your own well there. Make sure you can put your own well there. And then never ever have to buy water again. With an acre of land, let's do the math on this. An acre of land is 42,560 square feet. And I forgot the figure. It's let's see, how many liters? All right, number of liters in 1 acre. Okay. Let's see. Acre to liter conversion. Okay, I believe I have here 1 acre is equivalent to 102,798 liters. Okay. So, hold on, let me read. 702-790, okay. 102-790. All right. Times 42,560. That's a large number, man. If you want to become wealthy and water, buy your acre of land. I like to measure wealth in terms of people, social capital, and natural resources. I really don't use currency as my basis of determining wealth. Is how much social capital do you have? That people are really wealth. People and relationships are wealth. Because you're going, you know, most of the things, a lot of things you're going to get in life is from them. And the other part of it is natural resources. So instead of being a millionaire or billionaire, be a, I don't know, aquanaire. But, and like I said, I measure it. That's how I measure it. How many square, or like I said, an acre is 42,560 square feet. Okay. All right. How many liters of water make up an acre? Then multiply that by 42,560 square feet. Look at the number. That's how wealthy you are. If you got more than 1 acre, more power to you. But 1 acre, you should must be pretty set. You and your family should be set for life until the well runs dry. Then just get another acre. But that acre, I mean, once again, water's is older than the sun. And that's why we call our 4 acres in Hamilton County, Florida, earth wealth. Earth wealth. Because water is part of the wealth of the earth. And like I said, we take it for granted because we're driving on it, we're sitting on it, we're walking on it. And if you go to an airport or a train station or a bus station, let's say you buy a bottle of Fiji water or Evian, you know, how much do they charge, you know, for a liter of that stuff? If depending on how it's packaged, water is more expensive than gasoline. Anyway, all right, that's my rant for today on water, which is also blue gold. Anyway, you know, get yourself an acre land, get a well on it, and sell water to your friends and family or neighbors. Anyway, let's see. All right, let me go back. There was a guy, I wanted to get him on here, but he sold his business. Guy that was in East Africa, he started a company. That's what he did. He formed a company that he harvested rainwater, and then he sold it. He sold it to, you know, the villagers and whatnot. And then he sold the company. His company's called Skydrop. But when I did, I reached him, and he told me he sold the company. Anyway, but there's others like him, so we'll. But you, you know, you can do the same thing. All right. Okay, open phone lines if you guys want to talk about anything. It is Friday. And Memorial Day is coming up here soon. I guess that's when summer officially kicks off with springtime right now. And in addition to us having Zoom calls and on, you know, getting 100 houses built in a day, we're also going to start doing, if you got a property tax bill or know somebody's got a property tax that is, they don't know how they're going to pay it, and then they want to prevent losing their house from not paying the property tax, real estate property tax. We're going to start having sessions on a weekly basis on how you can resolve that. So I'll be announcing that on Monday or Tuesday of next week. Okay, let's see. Let's go to the phone lines. 410, area code, Jamaica is open.
Okay, Brother L.A., how are you?
Fine, fine. Good morning. Good to hear your voice.
That's a very interesting topic you put on this morning. You know, when I was a kid, I used to see movies where they used to have wars over water in the West.
Right. And they still do in some places.
Yeah, and I think, correct me if I'm wrong, someone wrote an article that the next wars would be over water or the access to water. I think South Yemen is a place where they have very limited water resources, or they don't have any water at all, I guess. I may have misinterpreted that. But the thing is, we really don't understand the importance of water. And the one thing that really scares me is the effort to try and control people's access to water. What scares me.
I agree. Matter of fact, they had a James Bond movie, probably my favorite James Bond movie, called The Quantum of Solace. And that movie was about water. James Bond, I'm not going to give it away, but it involved water.
Yeah, and if you look at it, correct me if I'm wrong again, there have been efforts to try and remove the control of water. I think in Detroit, weren't they trying to take away the ownership of the water from the city of Detroit? And when you look at Flint, Michigan, with the way that deal was done, it's scary because some people have tried to weaponize water, especially down in Jackson, Mississippi. And
that's the right word. Right. Weaponize is correct. Matter of fact, a lot of people have lost their homes because they couldn't pay their money. Let's say the mortgage was paid off. So you've had people in many cities in the United States who have lost their home, not because we're talking about debt-free homes. They paid off the mortgage, but they couldn't pay that municipal water bill. So if you don't pay that municipal water bill, they can take they can auction off that lien, and you can get foreclosed. So a lot of people have lost their homes over water. So that. Municipal water in many places in the United States that has been weaponized.
Yeah, I had a friend that almost lost his house because he didn't pay his water bill, which was negligence on his part. But the thing is, he almost lost it. We had to come together to help him pay that water bill to keep his house. And in the prison area where I live at now, what they did was, and I live in a rural area, they came through on one part and they put in a water sewer system. And they restricted us from using our wells to supply our houses water. They made it against, they put in a regulation that made it against us having our pumps that was pumping water from our wells. They put in a regulation.
See,
that's
why I don't like. That's why I don't like a lot of municipalities, particularly because a lot of them are tapping into. They want to take away your water right, and basically they want to sell your own water. That, you know, like in Washington, D.C., you know, you can, there's no such thing as groundwater. I mean, it's there, but you got to take it from, you got to, you can get in the Yellow Pages and call Culligan Man, and they'll deliver it to you. You can do that. But as far as digging a well in your backyard in D.C., no, that's not done there. But where I'm at right here is they have a municipal system here, but they also have a well system. So me, and I know like about at least 3 or 4 of my immediate, I can look out the window and see them. We all have wells, and I prefer the well system.
I prefer the well system too, because there's plenty of water here in my area. But the thing is, when they put that water sewer system through here, they made it against the county ordinance, whatever what the hell it is, that restricted us from using our pumps. And on the other side of the county, we don't have the water and sewer system. So we're stuck with the idea of having to pay a water bill every month. And I guess every other 2 or 3 years, they go up on the water bill. So they basically have enslaved us to pay them a water bill. And I tried to find out who owned the water system. The county doesn't own the water system. And when you ask a question about, well, who owns the water system and who's getting the money, they say it's a quasi-organization, like a, I guess you could say like an airport or something. It's not privately owned, but it's not government owned either. So who's getting the money? Right. And we haven't figured that out yet. I know the county doesn't
I visited a historic black county. Not going to name it. They had a 35. They were getting water from another town in Oklahoma, and they were behind by $30,000. Now, what I was afraid of at the time, and I haven't followed, I need to follow back up on it, was if I had $30,000, I would have paid that water bill and then come up, because really, like I say, that town is sitting on, well, everybody in that neck of the woods probably has a well anyway. So I don't even know how they would even get water from another city. But anyway, water's been, a lot of little municipalities have weaponized it, like I think in Highland Park, Michigan. A lot of those vacant houses that you see up there are the result of the city foreclosed on people's homes for non-payment of water. So I believe, and I think basically, if I was in charge of a school system, which it'll probably never happen, but you can do it within a family, though, teach your children or grandchildren or great-grands, whatever you got, neighbors, what have you, on how to dig a well and how to, you know, what do you need to dig a well, you know, purify the water, and then also as a backup system, how to harvest rainwater. I think those are two important life skills that everybody should be taught. But we're not taught that, because then we're relying on that municipal water. And that's expensive, because, like, you take them to Detroit and Flint, which you brought up earlier. Okay, well, both of those cities have an aging infrastructure. And that's expensive to replace that and even maintain it. And then something that you were talking about, like the house I got in D.C., the water's off. I have not cut the water on. I mean, a pipe broke. So to keep the dissuade squatters and whatnot, if they happen to break in, which that hasn't happened, thank God, they couldn't use the, you know, there's no water there. I'm working on getting it restored, but there's no water there. But I get a sewage bill every month. So whether you don't even have to use a drop of water in Washington, D.C. Pittsburgh has the same thing. In Pittsburgh, you don't have to use not a gallon, not a drop of water from the city of Pittsburgh, but you got a monthly sewage bill that you have to pay. Whether you flush your toilet, not flush your toilet, use any tap water, if you're sitting in the city of Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania, or Washington, D.C., you have to pay. And if you don't pay the sewage bill, then they can put a lien against your property and then sell your property for that. So they you know, it. That's why I don't like cities no more.
Well, the same thing applies here. I had a rental that was unoccupied, and I shut off the water system. And they said that, look, you still have to pay the bill because even if you don't use the water, but you still have a meter there, so you have to pay that bill. And I found that unfair because I cut it off because I didn't have somebody occupying the property, but I still had to pay that bill basically because I had a meter there and I had to pay for the meter being on my property. So that applies, I guess, I don't know whether it applies all over the country or not, but I know it applies here also. Mm-hmm. But the one thing is, what you're saying is nobody has really sit down and seen the importance of water and how it applies right. to your living and surviving here on Earth. Because until you brought the subject up today, I just took it for granted.
And most people do. Most people do. Like I say, I brought up on here before, 88% of the population of the United States, now we got over 300 million people that live in the United States. 88% of the United States population only occupies just 3% of the land mass. So that's where the shortages come in at. That's when the hyperinflation comes at, when you have 88% of the population that are all crammed into just 3% of land mass. Now, once again, let me, for people that haven't heard my analogy before, if you look at the landscape of the United States as in terms of a chessboard has 67 squares. 3% of that is just two squares. So you've got 88% of the population of the United States, which is over 300 million people, that are crammed into those two little squares out of 67 squares. That's where the high water bills come in at. That's where the high rent comes in at. That's how the high water. That's where homelessness is. A lot of your contemporary problems, all right, is because we have 88% of the population crammed into that those two little tiny squares, where the balance of the population, which is 14% of the population in the United States, they have, you know, the rest of those squares, what, 65 squares where they can live. That's rural, those are the rural areas. But a lot of us don't have the we don't have the skill set to, like, most of us don't know how to drill a well. I'm gonna have to learn that skill, how to drill my own well. I learned that grades 1 through 12 or 4 years of college. I'm on a well, and I got a reverse osmosis system on my well system, so I can drink the water and all that, but and cook with it and all that. But I need to know how to drill it, and then maintain it. Because, like I say, if you just got an acre of land, okay, you're worth millions of water in water right there. It's no need for you to your family, generations to come, to ever buy water again, unless in the house that I'm in right now that was on a well, we've been pumping water out of this well for over 30 years. Well, actually over 33 years. All right. So, and then, like I said, I got other neighbors. They're on the well. They have their own wells too. All right. So it's, you know, when I look for a piece of land in a rural area. That, as a matter of fact, I bought something in Oklahoma. And the seller of the property wanted to retain mineral rights because in that part of Oklahoma at one time, you know, you had oil tycoons. They can have that. What I'm interested in, and that's why I call my first 4 acres of earth wealth. I call it Earth Wealth Forest, and we're setting up Earth Wealth E-Village, which E stands for Energy Village, is because the earth wealth, the primary earth wealth that I look at, that, like you just said, really nobody ever talks about. That's why I love it so much, because it's in plain sight. Actually, it's in plain sight, but yet not in plain sight. It's groundwater. All right, so every time it rains, you know, you get another million acres of water that, you know, that nobody's going to steal it. You can't lift up an acre of land and steal. So it's not talked about. It's really not a sexy topic or whatever, unless you live in an area of the world where, like I say, it's simply, if you find me in a area, a country, a city where there's a severe shortage of water or whatever, and a lot of times it's a densely populated, you know, area. Not in all cases, but because wells do run dry. But there's, like I say, in this country, 97% of the United States is rural. You know, like I say, this topic came up because, like I say, a friend of mine from high school, he was out driving on the road, and he showed me where he was driving out in Coconino County, Arizona. And I just said, as I mentioned before, man, you're driving in the real United States. That's what I call the real United States. New York, L.A., Seattle, all these densely populated cities, I don't consider that the real United States. It's in the United States, but it's not. The real United States, and what I mean by that is where you can go and you can find what some people call a pocket of freedom, and you can basically do practically anything you want to do legally. So he was saying, his theory was, the reason why, because he was driving for miles and miles and didn't see nobody driving past him on the road, no buildings, you know, for miles or whatever. He said there wasn't any water. That's the first thing he said out his back, mouth. And I said, you see all that vegetation out there? No man watered those plants. Okay. That's groundwater.
That's right.
That's groundwater. That's You're driving on it. But we're not talking. You know, so, yeah. And, you know, 15 years ago, I wasn't thinking this way. You know, if it didn't come out of a tap. So, you know, water in a lot of your municipal areas, but the large, they've weaponized it. And it's now granted, you know, even if you learn how to drill a well, you know, you're going to have to come out of your pocket, you know, for the materials and, you know, how to house it and all this other stuff. But that would be, now, some people talk about you go to college and you become a STEM major, something in computer science, technology, engineering, that type of thing. I'm saying that people need to take a look at, regardless of age, what I call the off-the-grid technologies. That's like learn how to drill your own well. I think that's a very valuable life skill. Also, harvesting rainwater. Because if you don't know how to harvest your own rainwater, what's going to happen is rainwater, the moment it hits your roof or driveway or street or front lawn, is now becomes stormwater. And stormwater, particularly if you're in an urbanized area, then it runs off to the street, and then it goes into the sewer system, all right? And then now you're talking about the government gets involved then. And that sewer water makes it, you know, when you flush your toilet and all that, it unless you have a septic system on your own property, that's private. Then it makes its way back to the water treatment system of that municipality, and that's one of the services, and it is a very important service, and it costs money to pay the employees because the employees have to live, and then a lot of city employees now are unionized. Unionized labor is expensive, and so what? When you turn on that tap, they're essentially selling you your own water. Now, granted, they cleaned it up, but it's your water that's really water that originally came off of your rooftop or ran out of your yard because you didn't know how to harness it and then keep it within your own ecosystem and, you know, be – that's why I'm all into this off-the-grid stuff. I came up in Washington, D.C. Now, I'm a rural type of person. That's where I'm at with it.
Well, look, you covered several different areas. Number one, I think, look, your sewer system is not connected to your city drainage system. That water that drains off your rooftop onto the street, it's not connected to your sewer system. That's a different...
All right, not where I'm at, but like in D.C., we have a sewer system up there. You know when it... You know when
you
it
have
runs,
the sewer system?
You know where you can... Yeah, like in Baltimore.
Right, but what I'm trying to tell you is that drainage system where the water drains from the street does not go through your sewer system. It goes straight to the outlet to the nearest river ever, what have you. Your sewer system goes to a water treatment plant. But that water that drains off the street, it goes straight to the nearest river ever where it's got to go at to go out to the ocean. So that water never touches the sewer system. So you got two different outlets.
All right, I did not
like
know that. Okay.
Now, I would say this. Everybody needs to know how to test the water. If you're going to go in and capture water, you need to know how to go in and test it for impurities or what have you, because in these cities you got a lot of, the air quality is not that great. But that's a good idea to capture that water and use it as a water reservoir to go in and do what you need to do, if you can do it legally. Now, the other thing that you...
Man, that's right. It's got to be legal because in some cities, it's what we're talking about. In some cities, it's been outlawed. So it all depends on where you are. You're right.
Yeah. You know, the snow that falls in these cities, like particularly where I live, that in Baltimore and everything, I wouldn't trust that, you know, because the thing is, I don't know exactly what the air quality is, but...
Air quality, and then you don't know what people are flushing down the toilet these days. I mean, we got all kind of poisons, all kind of drugs. You know that there's a lot out there.
It is, and the other thing is, you said something that you've been preaching about. I wanted to send. You know, if I find it, I'll send it to you. It showed where there's a large area of the United States that hasn't been populated. And the thing is, it showed why it hadn't been populated. And I wasn't thinking about you when I saw it, and the guy explained why. The population is dispersed the way it is, and that land that it showed, there's a lot of unclaimed land out there. And this video showed why. And it's not so much that it's not livable. It's just that, you know, you got to take into, if I can explain it correctly, you got to take in the part that a lot of it is mountainous, a lot of it is swamp, and a lot of it is just inhabitable. Because now, if you go west of the Mississippi, a lot of that area is desert. And the thing is, you know, I mean, hey, look, it's just to a point where it's not going to support vegetation ever, what have you. And then it got into a lot of other things. I'm going to send it to you if I ever get a chance. And the other thing is that just some areas that, you know, is uninhabitable. I mean, I mentioned earlier that in South Yemen, I think they have a water problem. And the thing is, they were saying that a lot of wars over in certain areas is over water, but the access to water. But my thing is this year, when it comes to education, a lot of times it's not formatted in a common sense way to get people to realize a lot of things that they should be aware of. And I think that's a problem, because until you brought this subject up this morning, I had never thought about water and the importance of it, because I've always been around it. I've always taken it for granted. And the thing is, I've had the fortunate experience of being an urbanite and a rural person. So I've seen both sides of the coin. But it needs to be addressed, because the thing is, you take the elites in this world, they have gone in and they had determined that, hey, look, you know you need water. And they have really weaponized it to the point where they can make a buck out of it, because most of these water and sewer systems in these cities have been privatized. And by being privatized, that means that private owners are in control of some of these water and sewer systems in municipal cities. So it's something that needs to be addressed.
Well, there's a Wikipedia article titled Water Conflict. And it says here, water conflict is a term describing the conflict between countries, states, or groups over the rights to access to water resources, according to the United Nations.
Mm-hmm. And, you know, the worst thing that people could have done is to dam some of these rivers. These rivers don't even flow to the cities, to the seas. I think the Colorado River is one of them. And the thing is, the Nile River has a dam, the Aswan Dam? And I just believe that, you know, in man's effort to try and get water to different places, it's upsetting the balance of nature. Because before they put those dams there, I think, you know, they had good access to water, but they're trying to go in and make sure that they can control the water flow. And that's something that I think needs to be addressed also. What kind of damages are you creating by going ahead on and trying to retain a lot of that water and not letting the water go out to the seas the way nature intended it to do? But that's just my theory, you know. But,
I'm glad you brought that up. Yeah.
Well, I think man is too smart by half. You know, hey, look, if it's working, don't change it. If nature has it going that way, it's going that way for a reason.
Right. I'm reading here, water wars in Florida. According to the Natural Resources Defense Council study, Florida is one of 14 states predicted to face high-risk water shortages by 2050. The state's water is primarily drawn from the Floridian aquifer, as well as from the St. Johns River and the Suwannee River and the Ocala River. Florida's regional water conflicts stem primarily from the fact that the majority of fresh water supply is found in the rural north. Now, that's why I have my 4 acres, in the rural north of Florida. All right, while the bulk of the population and therefore the water consumption resides in the south. That's true. Florida's got 67 counties. And the heavy population centers, and it's not that many towns, too. Jacksonville, Florida, which is the largest city in Florida, which would maybe 900,000 people. Miami, Florida, or just say Dade County, which includes Miami, Florida. Broward County, where you have Fort Lauderdale. Let's see. Orlando, Florida, and Orange County. And the Orange County's got over a million people. That's where Viotta lives. And then you have Tampa, which is 30 miles away from where I'm at right now. And then St. Pete. Tallahassee. So that's seven cities out of 67 counties. Now, all those places, those seven places I just named in Florida, all right, they have the densest population, the most people, but that's just seven. Now, but Florida, once again, has 67 counties. Florida is a rural state. So up where my 4 acres is, I got deer, turkey, I got wildlife. There's water, matter of fact, maybe about a 10 or 15-minute drive from that 4 acres. There's a state park where it's just, if I can show you a picture, but you might think the picture was touched up. In person, you see really, it's a spring there. It's just clear, fresh water. And then 45 minutes away, there's a national forest away from the 4 acres. So, like this article says, the water war by 2050, whenever it's going to be in Florida, is not going to take place in the rural areas of Florida. It's taking place where people are getting these high utility bills, water bills right now. I tell people, particularly when it comes to this tiny house idea thing in rural areas, the best places to live in the United States, where you don't have to worry about being shot, and I'm not going to get into other social problems, but look for a county that's got a small population. What I mean by that, a county that has probably no more than about 35,000 people, 40,000 people tops, all right? And then look for a community, I'm going to say, that has 2,500 people or less. I think those are the best places to live in the United States, where you can basically, you know, for me, I like towns that have a population of 400 people or less. But I'm going to say 2,500 people less, because with that, your striking distance of, if Walmart, Amazon will come to your door, the pizza man will come to your door, you know, with all these apps on the phone, Uber, Lyft, you know, a town that's got about 25 people or more, and then you got satellite towns also and whatnot. So, that's what I call the real United States. You don't have, in a lot of your smaller towns, you don't have a homeless problem. You know, There's rural crime now. Crime does happen in the country, but it's not like it is like it would be like in a Chicago, or, you know, or Los Angeles or D.C. or someplace like that. So that's why I'm all, you know, go off grid. And now you can go off grid. I can get now. I'm not in the country where I'm at. The area where I'm at, which is in Polk County, Florida, Lakeland, Florida. I mean, right across the street from me. I mean, my side of the street, the suburban subdivision. But I got a well. I mean, me and my neighbors, we have wells, all individual private wells. But across the street from me, about a 30-second or 45-second walk from where I'm sitting right now, there's a citrus orchard on about 5 acres or so. So it's kind of, you know. But I'm 30 minutes away from Tampa in one direction and 45 minutes or so away from Orlando, which is in Orange County, which is, you know, it's more expensive. Now, the and things are getting steep here because we got a whole bunch of people, I'm one of them, that have moved down here. And, you know, so, however, in the northern part of Florida, like say, my fork is a three-hour drive away from where I'm at. But it's, like I say, you got deer, turkey. They say in some parts of the county, they're bears, but it's you know, I haven't seen anyone. I've been up there. But I have been to another area of Florida where there are bears. But they just had signs and all that. And then they had reinforced trash receptacles that are bear-proof. But I was there during the daytime. Where I look at nature, nature always knows where you are, but you don't know where nature is. However, as long as – but I felt perfectly safe and whatnot. I felt perfectly safe. But that's why I say a lot of people that are struggling to live in a lot of your larger towns in the United States, you need to go out to some of these rural – I'm not talking about the suburban areas. Maybe the exurbs, but definitely look at the rural areas that can be maybe a 20-minute drive away. Like Taft, Oklahoma, which is straight up rural, but 15 minutes away, 15 minutes in one direction or 15 or 20 minutes in another direction, everything that you would get, the basics at least, Walmart, T-Mobile, the bowling alley, places to go eat, hotel, motels, Holiday Inns. That's in all in Muskogee, Oklahoma. 45 minutes away, you got the airport in Tulsa, Oklahoma. So I just say move to a rural area, a strategic rural area. Go off the grid as far as your utilities go. That means if instead of getting your electricity from the local power company, go solar or wind. Instead of getting your water from a municipal water source, have a well put in or harvest rainwater. As far as not having rent to pay or mortgage payment, get together with some friends like the Amish and the Mennonite do and build your own house debt-free. But most people are not going to do that, but I'm just saying.
Well, most people don't have the skill sets that you're talking about, that you need to do that. And the other thing is, look, Brother L.A., I'm looking at the practical side. If you're struggling in the inner city, you're going to struggle in a rural area mightily. And the reason why I say that is because in most rural areas, if you're not close by a metropolitan area or urban area, you got to find somewhere to get a job. And the thing is, like you said before, you're going to have to if you can commute to the nearest urban center, yeah, that'll work. But if you're going out in the middle of nowhere and you don't have a source of income or you haven't accumulated, say like for an example myself, that you get a pension every month, you're a retiree, then you aren't going to make it. Because look, when you move to a rural area, you're going to have to, from scratch, build your dwelling. Now, the tiny home that you're talking about is a good idea because it probably is not going to take that much to construct one. But I'm just saying this.
Right.
If you don't have a plan and you don't have a skill set, it's probably, and look, if you're one of the urban poor, you're going to be, well, number one, you don't know that those places exist out there. That's number one, because when I lived in Baltimore, some people had never been from one side of town to the other. They didn't even know the other, well, they knew it existed, but they'd never been there. And with that being said, I know darn well they're not aware of an urban area or how to go about finding property and buying property because they don't have the money. But it's a novel idea. But before you can get people to realize what you're talking about, they're going to have to be educated to the facts that you're presenting. Because, look, you can buy land out here, and land based on what you find property values set at in the city, they're very inexpensive, but you got to clear the land. You got to go in, and you got to buy your materials. And like you said before, you got to, if you don't have access to a water sewer system, you got to do your septic tanks. You got to do your, you got to go in and drill your well and all of that stuff. And you better have some money when you get ready to do that, or you better have a group of people that are able to put funds together to make sure you can do that. And that's one thing that you have to take into consideration when you're moving in an urban area, I mean a rural area. Now, you can escape all of those problems, but you're going to have some problems like that. But what you're suggesting, number one, they're going to have to be educated to the fact. They're going to have to know how much it's going to cost to make that move, and they're going to have to make sure that, hey, look, I have the skill set to do this, or I have money to have someone build whatever I need. And it can be done, but you're going to have to make sure that, hey, look, you're well aware of what you're getting into. And some people just not cut out to live in rural areas. They're just not cut out to do
that's
that.
That's true. But you know, you're absolutely right. I'm not disagreeing with anything you're saying. But I think, and I'm over 60, you're going to have to re-educate yourself. Well, you don't have to do anything, but a lot of people – will be wise to re-educate themselves or get educated, develop or put some new skill sets in, because here's what's happening in 2023. All right, now this week we bought up yesterday immigration and the day before immigration. What's happening right now? Okay, you've got sanctuary cities in the United States. You have people there. I know of immigrants that have been here for 15 to 20 plus years. ISIS, they have no fear of ICE knocking on their door and they're getting deported. You've got Syrians in the immigrants in the country. You have Venezuelans coming into the country. You have, and they're going to these sanctuary cities with open arms. You have Ukrainians in this country. Okay, now, immigrants. So we're going to be hearing immigrant success stories within the next. Matter of fact, I heard one no more than about 2 hours ago. I wasn't even looking for the video on YouTube about this woman from Gambia, black woman from Gambia, African, that she's been over in this country and she earns now over $20,000 a month and worth over $1 million doing Airbnb or something like that. We're going to hear a lot more stories like that. Now, they might not be Airbnb-based or real estate-based, but we're going to see that. Because the immigrants are here. They're flowing in, more flowing in. And if we don't get the skills, and some of those skills we might have to learn Spanish. We might have to learn Ukrainian or Russian. We might have to, because if you're going to be in these larger cities, you know, like the last time I went to Chicago, which was about 4 years ago, it was about two or three Latino families that boarded the plane first. All right, that you know, on the way back, and that was from Orlando to Chicago. On the way back, it was simply the same thing. So, we're going to have to, like I say, people are going. You're going to have. I'm looking at this. You're going to have to re-educate yourself. Or I'm a big advocate of lifelong learning. You're going to have to continue learning new things unless you have a solid set up pension or whatever. because the like I mentioned this on this program before, my house and Wars, my next door neighbor, when her children, she passed away about a month ago at 103 years old. So her children, excuse me, not the children, her two children sold the house. They sold it for over $600,000. Her grandchildren and her great-grandchildren do not have $600,000 liquid, nor do they have the credit rating or score to come up with $600,000 to buy that, the grandma's house. So, like I said, this is the age of what they call it, disruption, where you, I mean, you just got to learn. You're going to have to learn new skills to survive and or thrive.
I agree with you, but look, L.A., you know what?
If you don't do it, you're going to be in trouble.
Well, immigration is not a black problem. And I tell you this. Our problem is we have been brainwashed.
Wait a minute. Let's back up for a moment. You said immigration isn't a black problem, all right? The family, my next door neighbor, whose kids sold, you know, because like she was 103, they sold the house. They were black. They are black now. Were, but they are. All right. The house was sold within a week to an Asian family, my new neighbors, literally next door neighbors up there, that own a nail salon. They're Asian. Okay. Washington, D.C. has been gentrified. So my peers can't afford, a lot of people, look, I'm over 60. A lot of 60-year-olds don't have $600,000 liquid to buy anything.
That's true.
Washington, D.C. has been gentrified. It's no longer Chocolate City.
And you know what? That was because, and look, let's really hone in on this thing. That is because black folks didn't take advantage of the resources that was in D.C. and these urban areas. Now, let's...
I agree. Let's simplify. I agree 100%. Yeah, I agree with this.
Most immigrants come with a culture where they're able, and especially when you move to a foreign land, what happens is it unifies them to depend on one another. And by them depending on one another, and I've said this over and over to my friends, you know what, an immigrant or some like your Mennonites and your Amish and let's go with foreigners coming in here, they come in here with a culture that, hey, look, we have to put our resources together in order to get something, and they can live cheaper than the average American person, especially black people, because we've been told that, hey, look, I get mine, and look, you know, you pull yourself up by your own bootstraps, where they say, look, we ain't got no shoes, and if we're going to have some shoes, we're going to have to put our money together where all of us can get some shoes. See, they have a culture that all of us can eat if we pull together. And that's where we fail at, because we've been brainwashed into becoming individuals instead of communities or a group. And the first thing you hear is, well, who's we? Well, you know, we got mulattoes and we got darker skinned blacks and all of this foolishness. Whereas, hey, look, if you're black, you got a problem. We know that this system was set up to keep us in our place. And in our place, let me give you a prime example of keeping us in our place. You hear us complaining about redlining our communities. Well, my thing is, there's no such thing as a problem. A problem is only a solution to make things better. But like, if you redline my community, then my thing is, hey, look, all of us in this red line community can put our money together and do what the hell we need to do to make our community a viable community. Hey, if you want to encircle me, then that means that, hey, I can keep all I have in here to do what the hell I need to do to make sure I have what I want. That's not a problem. That's their problem. If they don't want to loan me their money, I got money. So that means I take my money to do what I need to do to make things comfortable for me. And that's where we fail at. So when an immigrant comes in here, they're struggling just like everybody else, but they have sense enough to say, hey, wait a minute. I'm in a different environment here, and I got to do things together in order to survive. Well, we have never been taught to survive in this society. We have been taught to be victims, and because we're made to be victims. And I'm going to give you another example. We've had black community centers, business centers. We had Chinatowns before Chinatowns was ever created. But what they did, they pushed through freeways and everything to our communities, and like you said before, disrupted them, scattered us, and everything else, and made us not a cohesive unit. They made us a disorganized unit of people. So what black folks got to realize is, hey, we know we're in a hostile environment. We know we don't have any friends out here. But we do have a culture. And we need to depend on our culture to put our resources together to make sure that we survive as a race of people. Because the elements are here. What is it? Self-preservation and survival of the fittest. And if you don't practice that, yeah, we're going to perish. So I don't blame anything on immigration because, look, the immigrants are going to get help from the system. You know that. I know that. That's why they come here.
Right.
We ain't going to get no help. And once we establish that, hey, look, nobody is going to help us, the system is against us, then we need to get together to take what little bit we got.
All right, let me ask you this. Let me ask you this then. All right. Right now in 2023, the mayor of New York, the mayor of Chicago, the mayor of Los Angeles, and the mayor of Houston, Texas, I don't know about Dallas, but definitely Houston, those cities, and those are major population hubs and metro areas, they all have black mayors. So what do you think about those cities' future as far as black folks go?
You know what? I'm going to tell you this, Brother LA. And
D.C. has a black mayor, and Atlanta has a black mayor, too.
That means nothing to us. That is not our problem. Our problem is we don't take advantage of what's in those cities. Look, 65% of the population in Baltimore is black.
Yep.
65 cents out of every dollar spent in that within that city proper goes through black hands.
True.
I did the survey at the time that I did it. And the thing is, Baltimore, the state of Maryland is dependent on Baltimore population to make sure that everything that functions functions on that dollar that's in Baltimore City proper. There's not another metropolis in Maryland bigger than Baltimore.
Nope, Baltimore is it.
And
you're right.
That's right. And the thing is, based on what I just told you, we're supposed to control the environment we're in. Damn the politics. Politics is controlled by money. And the thing that needs to be done is, hey, If your company is dependent on being profitable in Maryland, it has to have a operation there in Baltimore to take advantage of all of that money that's in that city. Now you can't make it out there in Bel Air and all these other little small towns. If you're in business, you got to sell in Baltimore.
Right.
Or else you ain't going to be in business. And the same thing in D.C. In the D.C. area, all those little surrounding counties is dependent on federal government and dependent on black spending money, used to. and the surrounding areas, Prince George's County and all of those places. Well, we're supposed to control the economy in those areas. And the only way you're going to do it is you got to invest in what you said before, common sense education. Hey, look, we got a problem here. And if we concentrate on our problems, then we can go in and we can control this area. Black folks have never been trained to control the space they occupy. And that's the problem, whereas these foreigners, they've been trained to control the space they occupy. The first thing they do is, if you're Spanish, you set up a barrio. If you're Chinese, you set up a little Chinatown. If you're from Italy, you set up a little Italy or what have you. We've never done that because they destroyed our sense of community. So I don't fear immigrants coming in here. They're going to get their subsidies, and the government's going to help them, because my cousin in New York said that when they told the immigrants they was going to put them in a shelter, they said, no, we want you to put us in a hotel. They demanded that they go in a hotel. They didn't want to go into a homeless shelter. They wanted to go in a five-star hotel in the city.
The mayor of New York, the mayor of New York City, I just read an article yesterday that what you're just saying, they're pressed for hotel rooms up in New York City because of that.
And look, if you're a black person that's homeless or a white person that's homeless, you can't go to the mayor and demand that, hey, look, I don't want to be in a shelter. I want to be in a hotel instead of a shelter. They tell you to go to hell. But in control of our own destiny. And until we are taught that we're in control of our own destiny, then, yeah, immigration would be a problem. But, see, immigrants aren't taking jobs from us. They're taking jobs from white folks. And the thing is, some of them jobs, they wouldn't give them to us anyway. So the trick is we have to be able to take advantage of our resources and use those skill sets that we have in our community to do what we need to do. I mean, look, we've always been the last hard first part. We've always been shunned aside for people coming in here. And the thing is, we've survived, but we just haven't really concentrated on survival. So, no, those sanctuary cities, the hell with them. Hey, look, we do what the hell we need to do to make sure that we get out, we bake our own pie and we icing on our own cake. That's the only way I can explain it.
Okay, well, we do have to be, education is essential.
Well, look, proper education, okay? Look, the 3 R's need to apply, reading, writing, and arithmetic. Now, the other thing is, and look, you said this on your show numbers of times, you look, the 3 R's is basic. The next thing you need to do is you need to be educated into these different skills to make sure that you know how to build stuff. You know how to repair stuff. And look, you can combine college with it. But I believe in situation education. Let me give you this one, L.A., and I hate to put it on the air because, you know, there's certain things shouldn't be discussed on the air. In these major metropolitan areas, the city has contracts, don't they?
Right, they do.
You had the Board of Education. I read somewhere where the Board of Education in New York spends $6 something billion and just school supplies, milk, food, and all of this stuff. Well, also, they have contracted out a lot of their administration operations. Well, situation education will say, well, you know what, find out how many contracts are in this city that the city is able to go out and pay a contractor to perform for. You set up an educational network to go in and say, well, look, these are the skills that are needed to perform these services for the city. And you educate the people within that city to go in and be eligible to go in and do it. As a contractor, you will go in and bid on that contract And that's going to give you a chance to go in and control the wages that you're going to pay a person to perform those skills. Now, I don't know exactly, just like Mayor Barry. Mayor Barry went in there and all of those contracts for D.C., he made sure that black folks got some of those contracts, right?
Yeah.
Well, those black contractors hired black people to do that work. Well, that provided employment. And then you go in and you care your food, clothing, and shelter needs for those people, which are black folk, and you circulate the money within that area. Well, that has nothing to do with immigrants. Hey, look, we eat a certain type of food, and my thing is this year, and I'm going to give you this one, and I'm going to let you respond to it. We have people working in these pizza places, don't we? We have people working in the Burger Kings, McDonald's, Kentucky Fried Chickens, and the Popeye's Chickens and all of these places, right?
Yeah.
What we do is we imitate what they're doing. Hey, look, you come in here, we're going to set up a school just like a McDonald's school. You teach our people how to prepare this stuff. We build buildings in our communities, and we hire each other or people in our community to work these things. We spend money with these fast food joints anyway. Hey, we got people that work for Giant Foods. Hey, look, if you're a manager, tell us how to set this store up, and we'll go in and we'll build it, and we'll supply it, and we'll get with these suppliers and do what we need to do to have these stores in here to serve our people's needs. That's the way you go in and you make sure that you can compete in this marketplace. But we haven't been trained to do that. If you notice, and you're a Chinese person that loves Chinese food, most of that stuff is Americanized. Hey, copy how they do their recipes, and we go in and we set up a soul Chinese place. We get the menu, we look at how they do it, and we go from there. Because I had a sister-in-law that her brother was married to a Filipino girl, and the Filipino girl showed her how to make spring rolls. She makes spring rolls better than what you find in the Chinese restaurant. So we got the chance to go in and do what we need to do, L.A. We just haven't been trained to compete. And until we do that, you know, hey, yeah, we're going to always be behind the eight ball, but immigration ain't our problem. Our problem is trying to make sure we learn how to compete and copy stuff that's successful and make it better. That's what everybody else does. Am I right?
Yeah, you're right.
Yeah.
You're absolutely right on that.
And look, most of our population is in the South. 55 to 60% of our population is in the South, where land is here. And the thing is, that's where we need to start.
You're right,
hey,
that's North Carolina, South Carolina, Georgia, Florida, Alabama, Mississippi, going Texas,
Louisiana,
Tennessee,
and Texas.
Yeah, and Texas,
so,
Tennessee.
Yeah, that's our power base right there. So once we realize the resources we have available to us and take advantage of them, hey, we're always going to be in this mess. So with that being the case,
where there's some ray of sunlight, let's see, about 5 months ago now, because it's May, probably 4 months, we had on three ladies from Metro Atlanta that they're developing their own town, Freedom, Georgia. So that's out of Georgia. Then Beata interviewed somebody on one of her YouTube videos from they're in Philadelphia, but they bought 110 acres in Georgia, which they plan on doing some type of development. And then we'll see the last 2 weeks. But he's out in California, though, but he's doing something positive, which we can do back east. And as a matter of fact, Viana's got a nephew. I'm going to see if I can get him on here. He does Airbnb. So you're right. The base, if you're looking for the African-American demographic, it's in all those places, the states that we just named, most of which are east of the Mississippi. Not all, but most.
Yeah. And look, you have stated it. You've had guests that have stated it that are out here buying property. And there are ways to buy property. But right in our local areas, there's places to buy property. People selling property. But the one thing that I get is this. Once you look at a piece of property, how can you make that property produce? Now, I'm going to say this with L.A. All of these people that are in these organizations, you got the frats, you got the links, there's fraternities and sororities, you got the churches, and you got what? I guess other organizations that you're aware of, the Urban League, the NAACP, you can kick them out the window. But all of these other organizations that are black-based, like your links, your sororities and your fraternities, your churches, your Masons, your Elks, you already got a group of people that's organized under a system. We have never taken advantage of those organizations. All those frats do is stomp the yard and have these street name parties and all this foolishness. You got the churches that goes on these retreats and have these conventions and everything. And you got the Masons that do the same thing. They haven't weaponized their personnel to say, look, we have certain needs here. We need to do what we need to do to make things better for our brothers out there. And all the other ethnic groups, like your La Razas for your Chicanos and your Hispanic Business League and all of this stuff, see, they're all about going ahead on and providing service, goods and services for their people. All we're doing is just having these little seminars and these conventions and everything. And we don't think about the need to go ahead on and make sure that we put programs in place or we organize networks to ensure our survival. So all of this is on us, Brother L.A. And you and I just stated that, hey, our power base is in the South, where all of the fertile land is and where there's land out there for the taking. But only you and a few people have really looked into this thing about buying property. You know, I bought some property. Until we use a common sense approach.
North Carolina, I think you got a lot of people that are doing well in that state. But, like, now, we had on, I don't know, 3 months ago or so, Pastor Slade out in, El Cajon, California. Now, I like what he's doing with his church. It's which, you know, it's volunteers can come there and learn something on how to build. Imagine if we had 1,000 pastor slaves.
That's the key. That's the key. Look, Brother Elliot, when the last time you've been to church? If ever.
Oh. All right. Online or offline?
It doesn't matter. When you physically have walked into a building for a church service.
The last time that I have physically walked into a church, it's been over 10 years, over a decade. I did attend church 2 or 3 times a week during the pandemic. But to answer your question honestly, the last time that I've physically walked into a church is over a decade, and it could be 2 decades. It's been a long time.
But now, here's the thing.
But I have attended online. But I know what you meant. I have not. It's put it this way, at least, I'm trying to think. Man, it might be a good 20-plus years. That's the last time I actually stepped inside of a church.
Well, now, look, did you notice the construction of that church?
The last time I stepped in the church, I was over in Europe. That's the last time I stepped inside of one.
I'm talking about a black church.
Man, this is embarrassing. I'm going to say over 25 years.
Well, look, let me take you off the hot seat, okay? Look. The way a black church is constructed, they have a place where they have their worship services, right?
Right.
And look, every black church has a dining hall. Every last one.
Right.
If they don't have a separate annex to it, now down in the South, they have a basement where they go in and they feed their members when they have little conventions or some things like that.
Mm-hmm.
I'm saying you only use that dining hall or that conference hall or that basement conference room once maybe every 3 months for association meeting, conferences, meetings, and things like that where all our churches get together. Or if there's a funeral, you have what you call a repast.
Right.
Now, what that pastor did, where you're referencing, he got together and said, look, you know, we have a place here where these single mothers need a place to stay, and while they're staying here, we're going to train them. The bishop, whoever had the mind, they could say, you know what? We only use these dining halls here for special occasions. These dining
There's one exception. Right. The only one exception I know about will be that, you know, the Sweet Daddy Grace Network, and they serve dinners, 5 days a week. That's a major profit center for them. But outside of them, I don't know of anybody else.
That's right. And even they could go in. Look, that's a business for them, serving those dinners.
Right, that is.
Okay. They're making proper use of that space. But even if they go into the sanctuary, they could go in and say, you know what, we're going to put up schools here to train our members in certain skills. And look, the thing is, you talked about homeschooling. They could go in, especially these denominations like AMEZ, COGRCs, and Baptists. They could say, you know what, in order for our kids to be properly educated, we could turn our dining halls into schoolrooms, like the black folks used to do in days of...
Now, that's a very, optically, that's a very easy thing to do. You're absolutely right. They already have the space.
It's there. And look, you got a church on every corner, so you can say, well, look, these churches here in this particular area of the city, we're going to make them an elementary classroom, and the other church dining halls, we're going to make them junior high, and then on these other churches, we'll make them high school training centers. And here's the thing. At night, for those that want a skill, we can go in and turn those into skills to upgrade their skill sets and skill level to do what they need to do to compete in this town. So we have the resources, Brother L.A. We have the money. We don't have the mindset. We don't have the mind.
That's an excellent idea. Reba, if you're out there somewhere, press 1. I don't see her on the board, but she might be. or Chris Collins. Is Chris, you still there? Chris, if he, that's an excellent idea. And
yeah,
you know what? I'm going to. I'm gonna work on that one because all people. I mean, I can call around and all a person can do is say no. Sooner or later, somebody will say yes because you're like you said, the space is there already, and you don't need a whole lot of space to teach.
But these places are spacious. And look, let me give you this one. Like the Catholic Church did in Baltimore, they had the classes in their little centers because they have their schools. Then they actually took guys in the communities out in these rural homes that was unclaimed. They teach them the fundamentals in the classroom, and then they put them in the actual work situation to go in and renovate those houses and then sell those houses. So, look, we got the resource, Brother L.A. It's just that we have
Chris Collins, Chris Collins, if you're out there, because he would make a good teacher. But, Chris, if you're out there, listen, just press one. Or Reba, if you're out there, press one. But, man, that's I'm going to jump on that today. It's Friday. It's some pastor. Man, there's so many. You take a city like, let's say Baltimore. Baltimore probably has about, I'm being conservative, 700 churches. That's a conservative number. They probably have more. If you get about 7 to 10 of those, and that's just one city.
Let me give you this, and I told you this a long time ago. When I first moved in 2000, there was a newspaper article, and I think I sent it to you, where 110 black churches got together because it went to the banks, four banks, Harbor Bank, Advance Bank, and at the time it was another bank, in Bank America, I think it was. But look, what they said was, they said, look, our members are being discriminated against, and we are putting money in these banks. And the thing is, what's happening is we want to come together and find out why our members can't get loans. And the thing is, if our members come in here, we need to set up a commission where we can find out what the problem is here, because we're putting our money in these banks every Sunday. Guess how much they was putting in those banks every Sunday?
How much?
Those 110 churches. Guess how much they were putting in there every Monday morning?
I'm going to just say a conservative. I'm going to say a super conservative number, $1 million cash.
That's what they were putting in there, or more. Which is $52 million a year. So now they got the money. All they wanted to do was have a chance to come in there and talk to that bank about why their members hadn't been approved for a loan. And out in Prince George's County, it was more than that. I think they every year they were giving those banks $365 million a year.
Easy.
So now the money's there, you got the space there, and you got the people that needs something that you're serving. And you're not taking the resources that those people are giving you to make their lives better.
Mm-hmm.
And I can resend that article again. But the thing is, Brother L.A., you don't have – look, the mayor is not our problem. The city council is not our problem. We are our problem. The immigrants are not our problem. We are our problem. What did Franklin Delano Roosevelt say? I have seen the enemy in
– Oh, no, I was thinking of another quote. Go ahead with the quote you were saying.
Franklin Roosevelt said, I've seen the enemy, and the enemy is us. Yeah, we got the enemies out there. But we can take care of the enemies if we take care of ourselves. We can deal with them, but we have to fortify ourselves against our enemies. But no, the mayor's not the problem. The city council's not the problem. We are the problem. See, we, hey, look, they're representing somebody else. They're not representing us. But if we represent ourselves, we can defeat them. But, you know, I'll just leave it at that. But think about it.
Well, you gave a solution here that I got to act on. Classics would be taught in these churches. They already, like I said, we have the physical resources, aren't they?
Yeah.
They already have the people or the community. It's just a matter of asking Pastor so-and-so, could we teach a class here every week?
We don't have to ask the pastor nothing. You know what? It's the trustees and the members that make that decision. Hey, look, if you're against it, then you find a job somewhere else. We got a need that needs to be filled.
Right.
Damn him. You know, now these private churches, you might have a problem. But the thing is, you tell him, hey, look, this is your church, like Pastor Dollar. This is your church. This is your family business. But if you can't go along with this deal here, then, hey, look, we gone. See, we have the power. All you got to tell him, look.
Right. Any place where you see a church, you can basically set up shop there. Because there was a move. I'm going to try to get the guy back on. He's been on his place. A documentary called Flag Wars. That took place in Columbus, Ohio, and about gentrification in that city at the time. And there was one lady that had a mini mansion. She passed away at 39 some years ago, but there were five churches within walking distance of the front door. And churches, they have their own agenda. But some can be set up where you can tap into the people in that neighborhood to help people out or teach, educate them. So
And if you have to hire somebody to do night classes or teach those classes, hey, you pay them a salary. We got the money,
right?
You know,
but
we're not taking advantage of our resources.
That's the bottom line.
Yeah.
A lot of us are not recognizing our resources, and then after we recognize them, Detroit, because Coleman Young, when he was living, he was mayor of that town for 20 years. And so we're not taking advantage of the resources. Chris Collins, if you're available, press 1, because he would you seem like you would be a good educator of this as well. I'll be calling you on this one. That's like a no-brainer idea.
Yeah, not only is Chris Collins a good teacher, but you have people working on these jobs.
Right.
That could come in and, hey, look, let me give you this one. We had a thing here in the county where guys didn't have skills. My father was a certified plumber. And there were people in the carpentry fields.
Right.
And we had people that was in the HVAC fields. And what this man did, he was a high school educator. He said, look, I'm going to get a grant to go in and pay you guys to give night classes to these guys that needs to have a skill.
Mm-hmm.
And my father, by him being a certified plumber, he had already gone through the certification, the state test, to be a certified plumber. And what he taught was fundamentals of plumbing, but he also taught them how to take that test and get their license. Well, guess what? Those guys went on to be licensed plumbers. Well, the thing is, you already got blacks doing certain things in certain fields. you just have them come in and pay them to do night classes to grown-ups. And if you really want to solve the problem of education, you go into these teachers' colleges and say, look, we need teachers here. And I'm going to say this here, and I know you got some heartburn about it. You have Omar Johnson to go in and set up the curriculum. Pay him to be a consultant. You know what I mean? Look, keep it simple, stupid. KISS. That's all we got to do, Brother Clay, but we overcomplicate a simple problem. That's what the problem is. But yeah,
that's true.
Chris will be a teacher, but you need more than one person. You need a bunch of people out here in these urban areas, like Chicago and Baltimore and all these places. But the thing is, he's one of a many that you can get to come in and say, look, classroom part, and look, all of these row houses in this city here, we'll go to the city to say, look, give them to us, and we'll go in and we'll renovate these places. And go from there. Either have the churches say, we'll buy these places, and hey, look, have your students renovate them to make them livable.
You know, there's a guy, I'm going to see if I can get him on here. He used to be a pastor in Baltimore. He does reentry, prison reentry. But he's based out of Indianapolis, Indiana now. He takes people out of prison and teaches them the trade, so, you know, renovating houses. I think what's his name? Potter is his last name. Let me see if I can get him on here. Chris Collins, if you're there, press 1 so we can bring you up before we sign off for today. That's something that we can, what's today, Friday? By this time next week, we should have at least one pastor to sign on. And you know what? I'm going to bring him back as soon as he's open, Pastor Slade, Pastor Roland Slade out of El Cajon, because he already does the, you know, the weekend type, not the weekend, they have volunteers, and they have weekly stuff on that. So he had a bottle of laryngitis. I just heard from him a couple of days ago, so I told him I was going to give him a call in a week. But
well, I've bent your ear enough,
man. That's a simple idea to act on.
Yeah, that's a simple idea for a complicated problem. But I'm gonna sign off, Brother Elliot. It's been nice chewing the fat with you.
Okay, all right, I appreciate it. Matter of fact, nobody else could put. They got other people in the studio, but they haven't put their hands up on. Blog Talk is like that sometimes. So you'll be hearing from me probably late on this afternoon, because that idea is, like I say, that's a no-brainer. And, you know, the resources, they got the resources already. And whatnot, so. All right, thank you, Brother Beasley, for that. And, on that note, we're going to wrap up for today. We'll see you. Everybody have a good rest of the day and good weekend.
All right, everybody. As you probably know, some unknown woman wrote a letter and gave it to Democratic senators claiming that way back long ago in the early 80s, she was attacked by Supreme Court nominee Brett Kavanaugh. Now, Kavanaugh has denied it, and, of course, everybody has questioned the timing of this.